Welcome back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus, the name you can trust. In business for well over two decades, we are your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. Basically, what that means is we provide it all. You can look nationwide, and you'll find very many businesses like ours. I'm not personally familiar with any, but. And what I mean by that is that we deal in everything. We're knowledgeable in everything. We buy everything. We sell, in other words, everything within our industry. We broker deals. In other words, we can, we've done substantial acquisitions. We've had coins in our shop over the years that are some of the most famous coins out there. I've had numerous of those in the shop, literally million, 2 million, $3 million, $4 million coins. I know that blows your mind, but they've been here. And they were, passing through our hands, basically. But it wasn't something I wanted to inventory, trust me. I wouldn't mind owning it as a collector, but we have customers that, or had one in particular that, he'd buy one for $3.5 million and sit on it for 4 years and sell it for $4.5 million. All the way down to, we buy bags of wheat pennies and steel pennies and, copper pennies people will buy. And, we just deal in everything. Obviously, my area of expertise and specialty is rare coins and Morgan silver dollars. I deal in those a lot. I love them. I think they're always going to be here to stay. They're always desirable. It's kind of an odd thing in coins. You have to have it. Well, we'll just keep it simple. It's supply and demand, economics 101. There are some coins that are incredibly rare, but not over, just not desirable enough to really drive the huge markets. And in some cases, there are certain coins that are just not popular, but they're very rare. World coins, foreign coins. A lot of that stuff can get esoteric. I mean, I've got weird Portuguese coins from the 1800s or early 1900s that are incredibly rare, and they're not worth much. And then you can get, a 1796 quarter from the U.S. Mint, the very first quarters ever made. They made 6,000 of them. There's probably 150 that have survived, and they can be easily. I had one in my collection I sold when I built my building for like $31,000 that is now worth $350,000. And, but there's a lot more of those than there are of that Portuguese coin. So it might sound a little complicated, but it's not. It's just basically American coins are the number one desirable coin in the world, no matter where you go. I know that's hard to believe, but now with the internet, everything is centralized or globalized, which is really kind of weird because it affects everything universally from trends, to news and then to the negative influence of, bad people and the kind of evil that we're starting to see break out around the globe is really overly concerning to me. I was doing a little reading this morning. I didn't have a lot of time today, but, you've got Berkeley gender neutral law terminology. Their city council passed a law, you may have heard of this, where they have gender neutral speech and city code demands. So, like, for example, if you go down the street and you have manholes, the big round steel things, you remember those? No, they're maintenance entrances or something like that. Let me look it up here if I can get to it. I love pop-ups, I have a website set aside and then they pop up ads at me and it's like, yeah, thank you. I needed a, I won't tell you what, but anyway, So let's see. Let's see if this one will give me a little more insight. So they call them non-gender specific words. So a manhole becomes a maintenance hole. Okay. And police, here's the problem. I don't know how you describe something. So you can't say manpower. You have to say human effort or workforce. You can't say brother or sister. You have to say sibling. I mean, folks, what? This is literally a city law. I'm telling you, this is all thought speech, policing. It's the control of, by what you speak affects how you think, how you behave, all that stuff. And, you know, the Bible even tells that. You know, if you speak trash, your brain becomes trash, and it's not what you put in, it's what you comes out your mouth that defiles you. So as you begin to play this game where they control your speech, well, what's, you know, you already know what's next. It's your religion. You can't say, you know, it's absolute violation of the free speech amendment. It's, this stuff is serious, folks. I'm sorry, but this is major 1984, George Orwell book stuff. And I don't know if you've ever read that, but when it was written back in the 30s, it sounded really far out. And when he wrote it, he talked about, you know, basically everywhere you go, the walls are like TVs, screens, huge. He talked about cameras everywhere, but he didn't call them that. He had stuff, you know, where you were being watched and recorded all the time. I mean, if you want to talk about changes going on in our society, we've got the Berkeley, gender neutral law and terminology things. They call them non-binary gender inclusivity. Like, I mean, come on, folks. You know, a guy's a guy, a girl's a girl. You know, they don't have bail bondsmen now like my dad was. They literally put in here, it's got to be called a bonds person. No more chairman. It's a chairperson, obviously. Craftsman becomes craftspeople or artisans. Firemen, firewomen, whatever. They got firemen, fireman, firewoman, firewomen. Firefighters, they have to be firefighters now. How do you describe somebody? You know, you can't say fraternal because that's male. It has to be social. Heirs become beneficiaries. I don't know why that would be any kind of a gender reference. Journeyman becomes journey, period, which is doesn't make sense. Maiden becomes family. Male and female become people of different genders, they call them. So you can't say, well, there were men and women there. There are people of different genders there. And then you've got man-made becomes human-made. Master becomes captain, skipper, and they go on. There's a huge list here. But how about, policemen and policewoman and police, you know, they have to just be police officers. Pregnant, why that matters, I don't become. It says pregnant women become pregnant employees. I don't understand that. Repairman becomes repairs or repairer, etc. It's just dumb. Sportsman becomes a hunter. Whatever. It's pure foolishness, and it's just you can't describe anybody by color, gender, race, nationality, religion. You just have to say a person mugged me. So basically, when you get like Antifa, I was listening to this police officer quite a while ago when they did a bunch of damage, and they couldn't get these kids who were witnesses excuse me, to a crime to describe the skin color of the perpetrators. And they asked them, and they said, why does that matter? And they said, because it helps us identify. And they had this gal on video giving an incident report or an eyewitness testimony to the police. And she would not describe the race of the people. So they got another guy that was with her that finally admitted, you know, there was this many Hispanic and this many blacks and, you know, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, their personality traits or their physical traits, they're the way God made us. So why do we have to hide it all? On one hand, inside our hearts, this should be the way we see it. We don't care if someone's black, brown, white, yellow. I mean, people of color. That's this fraud squad I talked about on the last show. Those four women that are just harsh, you know, they won't make it, but they do damage to America by tearing it down. And, you know, and Trump, I mean, it's terrible stuff, folks. You know, Nancy Pelosi was on the floor of the House, bad-mouthing the president, which is totally against the rules of the House, the Constitution, and, you know, they're tearing this country down. They're absolutely using extreme Saul Alinsky tactics. They are basically using the tactics of some of the harshest, most cruel communist leaders in the history of the world to basically create an enemy. There's, you know, Hegelian dialectic. It means thesis, antithesis, synthesis. He was a psychiatrist who created this theory, which has been implemented by many world leaders, many powerful world leaders, in some cases our own presidents. Hegelian dialectic, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. In other words, you create a problem. Hitler, you know, you burn down your own parliament. You blame the communists or the Jews, and then you go after them and solve the problem. And you're the hero, and they're the victims, but they're not victims because people are under attack. And when people are under attack, they'll do anything. They'll give up their civil rights. And we have done this. And you know that Homeland Security, TSA in particular, has no authority outside of themselves. So when they abuse people and they abuse their positions, and folks, they have no ultimate consequential authority. There's nobody over them, not even the President of the United States. This stuff was all written under Bush 2 in the Patriot Act. And frankly, you know, it doesn't matter what's going on. We have civil rights. And better, you know, Abraham Lincoln used to say, or was quoted as saying, better 100 guilty men go free than one innocent man be imprisoned or incarcerated, okay? And you think about that and you're like, I don't agree with that. Yeah, justice is pure, because if the guilty men go free, they're probably going to get caught doing something else later. But an innocent man in prison is an absolute violation of natural law. It's just wrong, okay? That's why our whole system is about freedom and liberty, and, you know, and slavery is wrong, okay? We're all created by the same creator. We're all created equal. And, you know, but where I was going with that is this. The first thing they tell us is the loss of life. Okay, so if you have two forms of government, basically. You have God-run and you have man-run. Okay, so God-run is our republic, hypothetically. That's what it was designed to be. And then you have man-run, okay? And if you have a God-run government, you get all of your rights from the government, obviously. And if you have a man-run government, you get all your rights from man or socialism, right? And so when you've got, you know, these people that are basically trying to encapsulate all of the power, they've got this fear of death. They don't believe in, I'll clarify this. So if you are a believer, if you're a God-loving, God-fearing person, you really don't fear death, okay? You, in an odd way, you may kind of embrace it, all right? And dying, different story, right? You might not be real comfortable with the process, and you hope you go quick and all that. But if you're afraid of dying, if you're not afraid of dying, you don't you don't consider the loss of life the greatest travesty. We are all going to die. Every living organism on this planet is going to die. And there's a twofold reason for that. One is it's a fallen planet. We sinned, and everything falls under the second law of thermodynamics. It all goes to eventually dust, right? And the second reason, I think, it's all part of God's plan, because we are surrounded by death. Children, you know, eventually if they have a pet, it passes away. You know, it may be the fish that you flush down the toilet once it passes, or it may be a mouse, or it might, you know, it's the animal that gets hit by the car. And eventually maybe, you know, it's a relative or you know, and hopefully it's not, you know, something that's terribly, you know, close or whatever. But everybody learns about death. You have different responses. You can be terrified of death. I know a billionaire, literal billionaire, who's, you know, getting up towards his 90s, and he's still running a huge business, and he's terrified of death. His sister's a believer. She moved to the area where he lives to try to lead him to Christ. He's not interested because he's a self-made man. And in the Bible, when God said you can't serve mammon and God, interestingly enough, the word mammon means man-made money. I'll see if I can look it up here real quick and get the exact. I got to go to King James to get the word mammon, don't I? Oh, nice. Thanks for cooperating. Appreciate that. Let's see here. There's so many different versions of scripture out there now. Let's see if we can. Oh, here we found it in King James. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. Ye, King James, cannot serve God and mammon. He says, you know, and then there's other verses along the way. Another one, just as a side note, that I think is really cool. I'll try to get back to you. If, therefore, ye have not been faithful in the, what, unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? So first, I'm going to go into Matthew 6:24, which I will go and look up the word mammon in Greek here, which is mammonas, Strong's number 3126. It means confidence in wealth personified. It's confidence in wealth and wealth personified. In other words, I'm confident because I am a self-made wealthy man. It's confidence in wealth. It's faith in wealth. It's not just faith in money. Mammon is different. Even Jesus spoke gold, silver, and mammon separately. Mammon is fiat currency. What you have in your hands, the Federal Reserve notes, that is mammon. Unrighteous mammon. Why? Think about it, like where I said, I read the quote a minute ago from Luke 16:11. If you are not faithful, if therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? Unrighteous mammon. It's man-made money. It's got a dual meaning. One is the self-made man. The second is man-made money. Okay? And so it's important to understand that when they handed Jesus the coin, and he said, render unto Caesar, it's because it was fiat currency. It had Caesar's image on it. You know, they asked him questions. Is it lawful to give tribute unto Caesar, and, you know, et cetera. And he handed it back, and he says, render unto Caesar, you know, in Mark 12:17. And Jesus answering said unto them, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. And they marveled at him. So, you know, if you back up a little bit, it says, shall we give, 12:15, first they asked him, about taxes. They were trying every way they could to trap him. They wanted to do him in, right? The Pharisees. This is the, and it says, and they sent unto him certain of the Pharisees and of the Herodians, King Herod, to catch him in his words. So the Herodians must have been King Herod's, right, they were his henchmen, I suppose. And when they were come, now I'm King James in it, they say unto him, Master, we know that thou art true and carest for no man, for thou regardest not the person of men, but teachest the way. Sorry, I can refine this. But teach the way of God in truth. Is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? Shall we give or shall we not give? It's not giving. It's tax or die, right? It's very clear in the Bible. Tax collectors were tough cookies. And they were bad. They were evil. And obviously on some form of commission because they did terrible things. Either that or they were afraid for their own lives. One thing just, now we skip into another tangent because I'm in the coin business. The coiner, the person who used to strike coinage, was often killed. They'd always be either caught pilfering or, they'd be given all these planchets or all this silver to make planchets out of, and they made hammer-struck coins, which meant they would put the coin either into a die or on top of this cone-shaped thing with a design on one side, and they'd either have a great big piece of metal with the obverse or front design on top, and they'd hammer that, or in some cases they would have the design in the hammer. And that's why if you get into ancient Greek and Roman coins, a lot of times they're off center and they're never lined up front to back, and they're very crude. But all that mattered was there was a certain amount of metal in it, and it had the stamp of the Caesar or the emperor of the time. Well, one of the tricks of the old Caesars and emperors was they would take people they respected or maybe feared, their high-ranking enemies, and put them in charge of the treasury and the coinage. And then they would come later, accuse them of theft, and have them executed. It was a very scary position when certain people were put in it because they knew what was coming next. And then what would happen over time is they would debase the currency, where they would make you turn in your old currency, or coins, I should say, and replace it with the new coinage. Well, they would debase it. And if you go through, there's two 200-year stretches of Rome where you can literally watch the coinage go from pure gold and pure silver, nice, big, large, beautiful coins, and go down, 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 until they were just pot metal, just junk metal. They'd go to base metals, copper and bronze, and then eventually they'd literally end up being pot metal or junk. And then if you follow the history of Rome, economically and everything else at the same time, you find that it was all synonymous or congruent with their collapse. There's about 200-year streaks like this. But the point of fiat currency typically ran a course. In Rome had the longest-running fiat currency, in other words, where they finally debased the currency. So you'd go gold and silver, and then you'd start mixing the gold and silver with alloys, and then you'd go to copper and bronze, and then you'd start mixing the copper with more alloys until you watered it down, and eventually you ended up with pot metal. Okay, so this is essentially what we did in 1971. Well, it actually was implemented anyway, 71 to 74. The process started in 71 and was completed in 74, which puts us about 45 years in. Rome's longest run was about 44, 45 years, about where we're at right now. And then they had a huge economic collapse. Why? Because they actually racked up tremendous amounts of debt. The parallels between Rome and the U.S. are shocking. You've probably seen the Hunger Games with all the districts, and that's copied from Rome. We have 12 districts. If you look at your paper money, it'll have letters, A through L, I think. There's 12. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L. That's the 12 districts of the United States of America. There's 12 Federal Reserve branches, and there's one central bank. They had the Decapolises in in Rome, and we have our same. We have our district courts. It's an oddly similar system, and they, you know, got into the gender neutral thing, into the homosexuality, the immorality, the violence, you know, folks. And you think people would go to the Colosseum to watch people torn apart by what, lions, and ripped apart, and they wanted more blood. You know, they used to call it bread and circuses. So Roman citizens would actually not have to work. They would take tribute from all the districts. And if you were a Roman citizen, you basically got a government stipend to live on. You could still make extra money, but it was enough to live on. And you got all these free benefits and free health care and everything. This is true. And it sounds familiar. But that all came right at the end. You remember Paul bragging about the fact that he was born a citizen and talking to maybe a centurion or Pharisee, I can't recall, that he said, how much did you have to pay for your citizenship? I'm a natural citizen. I mean, Paul was everything perfect on paper. He was a Roman citizen. He was the greatest rabbinical learner of all time. There's still records of Saul going way back, of this student right around the same time that was the most brilliant of all. He was out sacrificing lives, you know, killing Christians. He was so powerful and so zealous and so perfect on paper from a man's standpoint, and that God said, I got to have this guy. This guy is so zealous. He's so zealous, and he's so brilliant, and I want him. Well, we know why he wanted him, because he ended up writing scripture. He had an incredible guilty conscience for what he'd done against the church once he became a believer. You know, he debated. He brought in a lot of, you know, theological integration of Judaism into Christianity, explaining the transitions. And, you know, he actually enlivened the debate so that, you know, people like Peter, who were simple and things like that, had to deal with it. You've got Acts 21 and 2, where he returns and James is like angry with him, saying, look, I've got 2,000 Jews here that have accepted Christ and they're zealous to fulfill the law, and you're out there telling them the law is dead. And it's just, you know, Paul was a major, major feature at that time. So he was brilliant, and God wanted him. So he was the Pharisee of Pharisees, as he called it himself. So anyway, to get back to this, when they were come, they said unto him, Master, we know that you are true and carest for no man, which is important. It doesn't mean that he doesn't care. It's a statement of impartiality, that he just focuses on God. They're basically saying, we know that, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, that you are impartial towards man and that you love God so much. For you regard not the person of men, but teach the way of God in truth. Is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? Then they say, shall we give or shall we not give? But he, knowing their hypocrisy, said unto them, why are you tempting me? Bring me a penny, okay? Which it really wasn't a penny, but the King James Version converted into that because the people of the time could relate. It was probably a denarius or something like that. I believe it was a Caesarian denarius, I think, is the conclusion. Is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? Now, at this point, the Caesarian denarius had been debased. It was pop metal. We get them occasionally. They are very popular, obviously, and worth a lot of money because of their relationship to the Bible. And the reason I kind of went off on Paul a little bit was, you know, they had the prophecies from Jesus, where Jesus said, you know, and basically in 70 years or whatever, there won't be one stone left upon another. This place is going to be utterly devastated and destroyed. Jerusalem was created as the ultimate spot for Jesus to appear. So the whole world saw him. The most powerful leaders of the world were involved. The most powerful, I mean, government leaders, the most powerful military leaders, the most powerful spiritual leaders. Everybody had congregated into one city and one system under Roman dominion. And so when Jesus came and he taught, right? He taught everybody. They all heard him. Everyone who mattered heard him. Paul, that's why I was talking about Paul, but I was also talking about the prophecy that, you know, I told you that through history, if you look at the demise of the currency, it's always consistent with the demise of the society. And there's a lot of other parallels, way more parallels with Rome and their destruction and what we're seeing happening in America. So he says, he knew their hypocrisy. He's asking, why tempt me? Bring me a penny, or in other words, a coin, that I may see it. Well, they knew what he was going to bring him, okay? Because there's gold coins, silver coins that go way back that were still floating around. People would hoard them up, but still, no. They brought him a Caesarian denarius, okay? He says, and they hand it to him, bring me a coin, a Caesarian denarius, or, you know, enough of that. And they brought it and he said unto them, whose is this image and superscription? In other words, whose picture and name are on this? And they said unto him, Caesar's. And Jesus answering, said unto them, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. And they marveled at him. And then he goes on, and then come unto him the Sadducees, which say there's no resurrection, and they go on with other stuff about, you know, seven. I like the seven brothers who first took a wife, and they all died and passed her up, and I definitely didn't have any intention of covering this scripture, but it says, and the second took her. Okay, I'm sorry. I got to touch on this. I'll go really fast. Now, there's seven brothers. The first took a wife, and dying left no seed, no kids. And the second took her and died. Neither left he any seed, and the third likewise. And the seven had her and left no seed. Last of all, the woman died. Also, in the resurrection, therefore, when they shall rise, because the Sadducees didn't believe in a resurrection, they're just mocking him, whose wife shall she be? For the seven had her to be the wife. Now stop. I mean, what a dumb question. If there's a gal, if I had six brothers and, you know, I don't know where I'd be in the lineup, but if every one of my brothers died after marrying this gal, I mean, how many brothers would it take before they're like, I'm done with this game. I'm not connecting with the Black Widow. I find that ironic. It's like, you know, brother number seven was really dumb. He's like, wow, every other brother, all my brothers that married her died anyway. I just had to touch on that real quick. I think it's kind of funny. But so basically, you know, there's the fiat currency thing that I was discussing. And so what you have going on there is, you know, is man-made money, man-made government, etc. And they, you know, the difference between them and us is now we have hardcore atheism. We introduced, really, Darwinianism was kind of the accelerator of it. You know, if you do research on history, at the time of the Constitution and Declaration of Independence, they're really, everyone believed in a God, okay? The debate over who God was and was, you know, the deists versus, you know, there probably wasn't even many, at least in the American culture, which came primarily from England and Europe, there wasn't even pantheism. Everyone believed in God. So they had a different approach. And my point is simply this. When you do not know God, you fear death because it's over. You're terminated. You're done. You go to dust. It's over. It's done. If you believe in God, you're not afraid of death the same way. I mean, you really aren't. If you really have a good relationship and your things are settled with God, you're not afraid at all. And so that is what they key off of in socialism and even tyrannical dictatorships. I know down in North Korea, they just did some great big, you know, memoriam or something where they have their previous leaders, you know, the Kim Jong-un and whoever his dad was, and they have them encapsulated in clear boxes so they said so people can go worship and honor them. because they're a man-made government. They worship these people. This is why countries like Egypt, when they deviated, their pharaohs were deities. They were gods, which is why it was so important when Moses said, my God will do this and my God will do that, that the pharaoh said, no, I don't care. I'm not going to respond to you because I am God. My country's prosperous and the weather is what it is or whatever, because he was God. He was in control. Once that God took over, our God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, which actually in the ancient Egyptian was referred to as Ra, the God of gods, the sun god, once he started to really put the hurt on, not just Pharaoh, but his whole people, his whole community, it was bad for the Pharaoh. I mean, that's why Ramses II, you know, he ultimately died. He was also known as Amenhotep II, followed by King Tut. If you go by the Hebraic calendar, there's two calendars. There's an Egyptian calendar and a Hebraic calendar. And I won't get into all that, but I'll tell you, the Hebraic calendar is correct. Everything lines up with the Exodus. And they even move cities. And there's hieroglyphs of all 10 plagues, or however many there were, and of everything. You know, the frogs, the blood and the water, everything has been documented in one city that they've dug up. But they moved to another city. They quickly replaced leaders with similar names. They tried to cover up the fact that the God of gods had destroyed a deity. And then the next up and coming was King Tut, and he died at a very early age because he commanded that everybody give up their pantheism. He made them destroy their gods. Now, you can go on Google and search this, and you're going to see exactly the opposite until you go to the right sites. It's very interesting, and like I said, I don't want to get into it. There's been people have worked so hard to develop calendars, especially the Egyptians, that absolutely basically say no, these things don't line up in the timeline. Although, you know, ironically, every archaeologist honors the Bible as the most reliable source of information out there, believer or non-believer. They use it consistently as fact. And if it says there was a city in a certain location and they dig, guess what they find? It's the Bible is inerrant. And you get into people that, you know, they'll argue about, you know, did, you know, the prophecy said Jesus would ride in on a horse and he was on two in one testimony. And I mean, things like that, they're not relevant, obviously, right? But the bottom line is the Hebraic calendar, Hebrew, ancient Hebrew, is accurate, and everything falls into place. And I figured a lot of this out when we went to New York and I went to the Egyptian Museum and I started to do research on it. Of course, now I was speaking to somebody about it a while ago, and they went on to Google and started reading me this stuff, a person who's very debative, and you know, they were reading this stuff from the Egyptian historical, you know, society, and then I had to show them alternative sources and of accuracy and information and et cetera. So, and you'll also know historically when countries abandoned God, they fell apart. So my simplistic point here that I've just beat to death is that we are falling into becoming a godless nation, okay? And when we become godless, we consider the loss of life the greatest travesty or tragedy that can occur, okay? Now, look at the Civil War. I mean, look at the Revolutionary War. People don't realize, you know, the high 80%, you know, 80-some percent, 85, 88% of those who signed the Declaration of Independence were slaughtered at the hands of the British. And brutally so, and their families. They knew that they were signing their death warrants, and there's quotes that say such, okay? So if you have a country that fears death, all they have to do is hang over your head the fear of death, right? And they can get away with anything. My point, backing up, I said, Abraham Lincoln said, better 100 guilty men go free than one innocent man be incarcerated. Our philosophy right now is better a million people lose their liberty than a handful of people lose their lives. This is how we think in America. It's wrong. And so we throw out all of our constitutional rights. We let the government take them away. This is a very old technique. It's been used forever by powerful leaders that scheme, that want, they want more power. And the way to get that power is through always through fear. You know, leaders lead through fear, and in most cases. In fact, we're seeing this more and more now. What happens every time there's an election? The Democrats start screaming, you know, all these people are going to die if we do this, if you retract this or you retract that. I've got some kind of funny stuff on that I'd like to touch on real quick. But the point that I'm getting at is it should be the other way around. Our liberty, the preservation of our liberty and freedom in this nation should be more important than the occasional loss of life, okay? And I'm not minimizing the loss of life or the, you know, premature taking of life or murder or any of that. It's rampant. I mean, this country, you look at what's going on, as we've got all these people, you know, gang members and, you know, MS-13 and a lot of this stuff is, you know, late term, we'll call it, immigrants, illegal immigrants. A lot of them come here. There's no honor. There's no respect. There's no dignity. They weren't raised by our standards. And so it's more important that we are not fear. We have no fear of loss of life, as opposed to the maintenance of liberty and freedom because of our inalienable rights that are given by God. And when we take those away, it is just a progressive process. It's just a matter of time before we lose it all. And unfortunately, America's going that direction. We do have, you know, the spiritual aspect of this nation, the Christian aspect that's unique. John Adams said it requires a moral and religious people for this system to work. As I said, Franklin, when he came down the constitutional steps and the woman asked him the question, "What form of government did you give us, sir?" He said, "A republic, ma'am, if you are able to keep it." Okay. Years back, when I heard that quote in high school, I didn't get it. If you're able to keep it, what did he mean by that? Well, now I understand. What he meant was you have to remain religious and moral. Now, religious is a word that was used then. It's a little different than it is now. Religion is the man-made institution, but it's spirituality if you're a believer in Christ. It doesn't matter what church you go to, as long as it's a Bible-believing, you know, Christ-professing church that basically obeys the Apostles' Creed and hasn't gone off the deep end on some non-doctrinal related issue. Spirituality. Now, just as a quick sidestep, there's all these things. What are the, you know, I'm looking online. There's five forms of government, five types of government. And they're all a progression one towards another. They've got this thing broke down in so many different ways now, but which is incorrect because, like, they'll say dictatorship and oligarchy. Well, dictatorship is unlimited use of power by one individual over an entire nation. Oligarchy is a form of government in which the power is in the hand of a few people or a small group. Well, there's really no such thing as a dictatorship. It's an oligarchy. One man can't control all the people. He has to have a group of people with him, right? Oligarchy. Government, monarchy, government ruled by a person of royalty such as a king, queen. Again, it's an oligarchy. It takes a group of people to do it. So when they say, I'm reading this thing, there's five forms of government, and they're transitional. Now they're saying, what are the seven forms of government? Well, you know, you can call it what you want, but ultimately a monarchy, a dictatorship, and an oligarchy are all the same because it takes a group of people to run a government, one man can't do it by himself. He's got to have people behind him. So, you know, the five basic forms of government is anarchy, which is the absence of government, which isn't really counted as a form of government, but it is a transition. Anarchy is always a transition into a dictatorship oligarchy. It's always a transition into leadership, because into a sole powerful leader. Because with anarchy, you have, you know, it's interesting. I remember talking with, you know, a relative of mine who at one point in his life was trying to argue for anarchy. And I'm like, anarchy can't work. Oh, yeah, it can. You know, it's like every man for himself. And I said, okay, what happens when two men band up against one man? He says, well, then that man, or I said, what happens when two men band up against you? Well, I'll get my friends and we'll band up against them. I said, and then what will they do? They'll go get their friends and band up, you know, and then another group, whatever. And what happens is all of a sudden you get this growth and this growth and this growth. It's not anarchy anymore. You start to get one dominant group, right? And within that group, what happens? They raise up a leader. And all of a sudden, you've got a dictatorship or oligarchy. That's why when we used to dethrone or depose, or, you know, secretly our CIA would assist company or countries in deposing a leader, and you create anarchy, oftentimes you get a worse leader after that. You have to have someone to put in place. You have to have a system. Otherwise, you end up with a worse situation than you had before. The other forms of government, republic. It's a government in which the people elect representatives to hold decision-making power, it says, but it's based on a fundamental set of principles that are non-negotiable. That's a republic. And then, you know, there's a constitutional form of government, which, you know, we're a constitutional republic with a democratic form of elections, okay? So the five, you know, political systems, democracy, republic, oligarchy, it's just really interesting reading this stuff because they've got it so messed up. I was trying to find somebody who actually knew what they were talking about here, and they don't have, maybe this one will do it here. They don't have it correct. And the reason I say that is very simple. It's because all these other forms of government, you're transitioning to two forms of government. You're transitioning either to dictatorship or socialism. Like democracy, the reason we're not a democracy is because democracies always end up as socialistic forms of government. Because what happens is the 51% vote to take from the 49 is the argument. And that's the only law is the will of the people. Well, the will of the people can be swayed. I just discussed that. You throw fear at them. You throw propaganda at them. That's, you know, Karl Marx's big thing, propaganda, you know, which all these things have been taught and implemented through history. We saw the 19th century or the 20th century over 200 million deaths at the hands of forms of socialism, communism, whatever you want to call it. It's all the same thing. Socialism always ends up in the form of communism. And people die and starve and get killed and brutality breaks out, etc. You have to have either so ultimately, you know, all these governments, they're transitioning to a couple of options. Like I said, you're either transitioning towards dictatorship, socialism, communism, or the ultimate is a republic, which is by the people, for the people. And we are the only country in the history of the world, I think, basically, that's ran this way. Israel's very, very close. It's important to know that for the fact that there's never been another country, okay, in the history of the world that has accumulated more power and abused it less than the U.S. In addition to that, there's never been another country that's accumulated more power and not only abused it less, but used it for benevolence and the spread of liberty and justice globally. which is why when we get like these gals, this Omar, you know, and this BDS stuff where they're basically, you know, wanting, you know, it's their movement against Israel. They want, you know, it's boycott something and sanctions. Boycott, I can't remember what the D is for. But basically, this is the big thing. I mean, right now, we've never been so verbally, especially obviously the Democratic Party, so verbally anti-Semitic. Well, at least not for a very long time. The New York Times, before the rise of Hitler, was incredibly anti-Semitic. And they praised Hitler. I mean, they hung on to Hitler for a very, very long time, far too long. They supported him tremendously until it just was so apparent that they couldn't lie. They would lie for him. They were feeding people propaganda. So BDS means boycott, divestment, sanctions. And it's a Palestinian-led movement right now for freedom, justice, and equality. BDS, it upholds the simple principle that Palestinians are entitled to, they say, this is the left-wing version on Google, the same rights as the rest of humanity. The truth is, you know, if you understand the Six-Day War, this whole Palestinian thing, you know, the occupation was basically, they tried to take down Israel at night with the assistance of all the countries around it and miraculously with incredible providential involvement, Israel prevailed. And then these people tried to come back into their land under the occupation of Israel, and Israel said, no, you're not coming back. And so they've built walls and they fought. These people, you know, they're Muslims. They hate Israel. That's the point of Islam is Sharia law. You hate Christians, Muslims, or not Muslims. The Muslims hate Christians, Jews, and infidels. An infidel is the catch-all for not being a Muslim. So they can claim jihad against you anytime they want, whether you're a Christian or not, and you know the rest. It's a very dirty, hardcore, nasty religion warned against by Thomas Jefferson and other forefathers who tried to be very diplomatic. A lot of their writings have been buried and hidden, but they warned us. And they even have, you know, jihad. They have taqiyya where they're forced to lie. They're commanded by their scriptures to lie. And they also have a form of, it's a Islamic form of jihad through overpopulation, okay? And they actually have the largest population increase rate of any race of people. Okay, and they, it's like 8 to 1. I can't remember. I don't have the numbers in front of me here, but they blow everybody away. Americans, not Native Americans like the Indians, but Americans like you and I assume, it's probably not a real popular Muslim show, we're only 0.8. We're going backwards while everybody else is coming in. And they're letting these people pour in and overpopulate us. So I've got, you know, the other things that are going on real quick here. I'm short on time. What's new? We did the Berkeley Neutral Law. Bernie Sanders, our big socialist candidate that says everybody's got to have equal pay and a living wage. So it comes out today that he severely underpays his campaign staff and workers. $11 an hour. He says the minimum wage nationally should be 15. Minimum. Well, guess what? He's one of the big abusers. You think, okay, well, maybe he doesn't have the money. He's a multi-millionaire now after running for office and becoming famous. And he also has generated an incredible amount of money. He's got the money. It's there to pay his people. Another thing, a couple quick, interesting sci-fi things that are going on. Elon Musk, okay, the president of Tesla, is seeking FDA approval to implant microchips into the human brain. He says they've already done studies on animals that show that they can download the brain and improve cognitive function through the insertion of these microchips. Well, the millennials are starting to eat it up. That's scary stuff, if you understand the mark of the beast, right? Wouldn't that be a great way to pitch it to people? Hey, it'll make you better, smarter, faster, whatever, right? And the download thing, you know, they can track. I mean, I don't know if it's true they can do it or not. But another thing that came out recently is what they call deep fake, D-E-E-P fake. Okay, they're using deep fake videos and deep fake voices. They've had calls from CEOs that have said to transfer funds immediately to certain accounts. And there's been three federal cases where they've used deepfake to do it. They can do deepfake videos now where they use they're not detectable that they're fake. They can take a video of you and then they can make you do anything they want. So we're heading towards some tough stuff. How can you have, you know, it used to be if you see it, it's true. No. Not anymore. They can convict people for all kinds of things. So the long-term prognosis of that is very uncomfortable, to say the very least. It's dangerous. And I had some cool little quips I wanted to read. I don't think I really have time. There's one here that I might be able to squeeze in real quick. A liberal's paradise would be a place where everybody has guaranteed employment, free comprehensive health care, free education, free food, free housing, free clothing, free utilities, and only law enforcement carries guns. And this guy says, and believe it or not, such a place already indeed exists. It's called prison. And that's, I think, just the greatest quote ever. It's from Sheriff Joe Arpaio. He's the guy they've gone after. I think he's in Arizona where he imprisons all these illegal immigrants out in the desert. And, you know, they've done everything to go against him. They've sued him. They've done everything. I have some other interesting stuff like that I wanted to cover today, but I didn't have the time. So once again, I appreciate you tuning in. I hope you learned a little something. And I never know which direction the show is going to go. You know the deal. Give us a 5-star review on Google, get a free silver dollar. Give us 3 5-star reviews, Google, Yelp, and like Bing, get 2 free Morgan silver dollars. And also preserve your capital now. Economically, we are on hyperinflation overload. Take care. God bless. Have a wonderful weekend. And thanks for your loyalty. God bless. Bye-bye.